And welcome. You are listening to Gore and Guilty Podcast. I'm Georgia.
And I'm Greg.
And this week we've got a slightly different episode. Well, different kind of crime. We're doing the Hatton Garden heist, which I'm super excited about. Isn't that right, Greg?
Yeah, definitely a different type of crime today. I don't even know how I ended up stumbling across this or deciding, like, I've had enough of murder lately and I just want to do one that's a bit more lighthearted, but yeah, Hatton Garden, just a straight up robbery. No one was hurt per se, or I guess it depends who you ask. But really excited to do this one. And if anyone listening is a Grand Theft Auto fan, then I suppose it really is like a heist from that game as well.
Yeah. Before we get into that though, happy birthday, Greg. It's Greg's birthday today. Woo!
Thank you. Yes. I've decided that I'm turning 20 because I'm rounding down.
Yeah, I don't blame you. But I'm going to be speed editing this episode, so it'll be released on the day of Greg's birthday. So when you see it, give him a little shout out and wish him some happy birthdays.
That'd be nice. But
I feel like it's been a while since we've recorded. And so what have you been up to, Greg?
Lots, actually. Lots on. I went to a festival, which was really fun, called El Dorado. So for people that don't know, it's based in Herefordshire, Georgia's home turf in the UK.
Yeah.
And they play a lot of like disco and soul and funk, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. So I did that.
Cool.
And then I came home and I decided to sell my car, which
no
is...
way, have you?
Yeah. Decided to sell my car. So that's gone. Sold Fevrum the Megane.
Oh! Any reason behind it or just not using it enough?
Yeah, not using it enough. Figured it would be a bit greener to not have it. And I just... It costs so much money to run these things now. Like, cost of living, through the roof. And yeah. I was just like, fuck it, I can't be bothered with this thing anymore.
Yeah, don't blame you.
So yeah, that's everything that's new in the world of Greg, I think. Am I forgetting anything? Oh, yeah, I injured my foot and I'm still feeling the pain of that. But I'm making a recovery now, so that's the main thing.
How, what happened?
Well, I couldn't even tell you what happened. It was just like slowly deteriorating over weeks because I have started playing football a lot more now. So I think the actual root cause of the issue is that I was playing football 3 times a week in like these crappy old boots and then finishing every game and being like, why do my feet hurt so much? And then like this went on and on and on until like last time I played, which was last Wednesday, I was literally just like crawling home, like, oh, not literally, but like hobbling.
Yeah.
And just like, okay, I need to take a rest. And then my foot got infected as well. And it was just, ugh, horrible. I won't go into all the gory details.
Oh.
But yeah, not been able to play since.
Get good football boots. Moral of the story.
Yeah, I think if I have time after this episode, I'm going to run into town. Not literally. I'm going to hobble into town. And I'm going
to
get some new funky boots. That's the plan.
Nice. That'd be good.
Anyhow, what's new in your world? What's new in Swansea?
I went to a little mini festival a few weekends ago, and that was really cute. It was like in Swansea. It's the second time it's ever ran. It's called Big Tent, and it was just lovely. Like, all the people were really good vibes, like ready to just have a really good boogie all night. And it was on this cliff face, pretty much, and you had a literal 180 degree view of this ocean, and it was so clear and so sunny as well that you could see Devon from it. It was just beautiful location. And the next day after Friday night partying, we all like wandered down to the beach. It was some walking distance, and washed off all our sins in the ocean to then ready to do it another night, which so much fun. And then after that I went to London for a few days, saw some friends, which was really nice. I hadn't seen them in years, and yeah, had a really good time. Jumped back on the train and started uni. But yeah, it's just been kind of jam-packed with lots of little trips. Not complaining, but yeah, it's good.
Nice. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Shall we jump into the heist?
Yes, let's do it. Let's get into the heist.
Okay, let's do it. Oh, actually, before we do it, we should also mention it is hot in the UK today.
I know. I know we talk about the weather every time, pretty much, but today is like one of the hottest days I think I've ever experienced in the UK. It seems like it's hot all over the world, pretty much doing this like big heat wave, but whew, we're not designed for it.
No, I literally can't keep up. And also we've had to turn our fans off because of the recording.
Yeah,
the noise in the background. We can't be dealing with that.
So we're both in little tiny rooms, little sweat pits probably. So we'll see how we deteriorate as we go along the episode, but all good fun.
Pray for us. Pray for us. Oh God. All right,
ready?
Without further ado,
let's do it.
We're going to jump into this one. As we mentioned at the beginning, this week we're covering a new type of crime, the heist. Now, this heist didn't result in any deaths, but the burglars managed to get away with at least £14 million worth of stolen goods.
£14 million? I didn't realise it. I knew it was big, but whoo, that's a lot of money.
Well, the estimates wildly vary, actually, and some say that it could be as much as £200 million worth of goods.
Wow, that's a lot of moolah.
It's a lot of moolah. Not a bad return for a day or two's worth of work. So yes, of course, this is the 2015 Hatton Garden safe deposit burglary. Do you remember this one, out of curiosity, Georgia?
I do. I remember it happening. And then I remember my dad saying to me, this is definitely going to turn into a movie. Because it just was like these, like, I just couldn't believe it, that they managed to do it. But yeah, I do remember, but there'll be details that have slipped my mind, so I'm excited to delve into it today.
Absolutely.
Do you remember it when it was on the news?
Yeah, I do. I do, actually. And I remember, like, the very high-level details. I remember seeing, like, the hole in the wall without giving too much away and all that stuff. And also, like, you know, the characteristics of the gang, which we'll be getting into quite shortly. So
yes, absolutely.
Just before we jump into things, I would like to mention the bulk of my research for today's case came largely from a Duncan Campbell article in The Guardian. So Duncan, if you happen to listen to Small Scale True Crime Podcasts, thank you very much. It was a great read. What makes this case different in my eyes, as I've just alluded to, is that the criminals were all elderly men.
Yeah.
In total, there were six of them, and the oldest was 76 at the time of the crime, and the youngest a mere 48.
Wow.
In the French media, they were labelled Le Gang du Papis, which translates to the Grandad's Gang.
Incredible.
I don't speak French, by the way, so I may have butchered that. The gang was so old that many of the men had to strain to hear the judge during their trials. The supposed ringleader was a man named Brian Reeder, aged 76 at the time of his arrest. Reeder is described as an easygoing character who was still friendly with many of his old school friends at the ripe old age of 76. He had worked within the jewellery industry and had more refined tastes alongside a love for skiing and sailing. It sounds like Reeder had led quite an adrenaline-filled life.
Definitely, for sure.
When he was accused of having taken part in a robbery in the 1980s, he fled to France and Spain. He eventually returned to the UK and was acquitted of the robbery. After this run-in with the law, Brian spent 9 years in prison for his involvement in a separate crime, a stabbing, before being released and getting into the second-hand car business.
Oh, so he's a bit of a wheeler-dealer, in and out with crime. Oh, I didn't know his history.
Yeah, very familiar with crime, shall we say. Brian had met his wife Lynn when she worked for a turf accountant. A turf accountant, for anyone that isn't aware, which was me before I did these notes.
Yeah.
a turf accountant is a bookie, which is just a like a gambling shop, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
When Rita was on the run in France and Spain, Lynn had even joined him.
Ooh.
But let's stop talking about the ringleader for now, and let's go to Easter 2015, when the crime was underway. Jumping right into things. The operation itself was complex and well-coordinated. Five of the gang gained access to the Hatton Garden Safe Deposit Company and disconnected the CCTV and alarms. By the way, are you familiar with what a safe deposit is?
I am, but give us a description.
I'll give you guys the description just in case. I actually wasn't super... I could probably have guessed or described, but...
That's it. I'm kind of guessing, but give us the description.
So, a safe deposit box, or safety deposit box, is an individually secured container that stays in the safe or vaults of a federally insured bank or credit union. The Hatton Garden safe deposits are actually kept deep in an underground vault. Hundreds of the deposit boxes at Hatton Gardens were filled with things like gold and expensive jewellery, among other heirlooms.
Wow, full of gems.
A lot of gems. A lot of money hidden down there. The Gang de la Papisse gathered outside Hatton Garden safe deposits, the building at 8890 Hatton Garden, after the staff had locked the doors ahead of their Easter weekend. Our ringleader, Brian, had actually travelled there by bus, which tickled me for some reason, because it's not the usual form of transport for sealing £14 million worth of goods.
Yeah, imagine, jumping on that bus. Oh, where are you going? Oh, seaside, going into town. Oh no, I'm just off to go burgle this place. Incredible.
He probably had his pensioner's pass, I imagine.
Oh yeah, he would have got discounted bus fare.
The gang were dressed as utility workers, and Rita wore a hard hat and a fluorescent jacket saying the word gas on it.
I tell you what, stick on a high-vis and you can get in anywhere. Absolutely. They always say that.
Absolutely.
And sure enough.
Here we are.
People don't question it.
They really don't. They really don't. And honestly, these guys were just unloading bags full of tools and equipment that they were fully intending to use to break into the safety vault. And because they were wearing these jackets and these hard helmets, no one was questioning it.
Slight sidetrack, but I heard a story this week about something similar. So this guy was, I think he was in Bristol, used to sit on a little chair in this car park with a high-vis on. Have you heard it?
Yeah.
And the council thought that was part of the zoo. It was part of the zoo car park. The zoo thought he was part of the council. And for about 15 years, he would take parking fare from people that would park. He'd make a load of money. After 15 years, he was like, oh, okay, I'm done. And just like stopped working. And it was only at that point the zoo went, oh, to the council, where's the ticket guy? And then the council went, oh, I thought he was one of your guys. And it was only then that they realised that this guy was just a regular person with a high-vis jacket making a load of money.
That's a lot of money as well. Amazing. A few quid a day from each car, hundreds of cars parked there, making a fortune.
Clever. Smart.
So, alongside their jackets and their bags of tools, the gang also took in plastic wheelie bins that they planned to use for the stuff they stole. The gang were also equipped with walkie-talkies. I don't think there's any firm confirmation on how the gang got into the actual building. However, there was no sign of forced entry, so the men must have acquired an entry card or means of access somehow. Perhaps they were calling in some favours from old contacts. Once inside the building, the gang changed up their approach. One of the gang members, John Collins, kept a lookout from the building opposite. Don't forget, the building access that the team have just gained was the easy part. What they came for is locked away in a highly secure vault. A vault that is deep in the basement too. CCTV cameras were disabled and or destroyed, other than one above a fire exit that the gang forgot about.
Oh no.
This forgotten CCTV camera contributed significantly to their eventual capture.
See, I'm saying, oh no, this is a crime. I don't know why I'm like on their side. Oh dear.
You're on the criminal side this time. Oh, there's something endearing about this one. It's hard to explain.
Weird, honestly, I think it's their age and like how well thought it was. I don't know. It is. It's funny. I'm like, oh no, darn it. They've forgotten one. Oh, it's like a movie.
I don't think you're alone. You're not alone on that one.
I don't condole crime, just saying.
Sounds like it. Bank robbers one day, murderers the next.
Oh dear, here we go.
The men sent the lift in the building up to the second floor and then disabled it. This allowed them to use the empty lift shaft to access the basement. When they reached the basement, they encountered their next obstacle, a heavy shutter door. The gang de la Papis were prepared for this, and they used their equipment to force it open. We'll share a picture of the door when we post the episode. But it's similar to a roller shutter door that you see it like a closed shop.
Right, yeah.
And in the photo, it's bent and forced upwards so that someone would be able to crawl underneath it. Another mystery is how the gang stopped the alarms. The last man the police caught from the gang, Basil, was known as the alarm specialist. And we'll talk about him more later. Awesome name. Again, it fits into like the movie, proper Cockney sort of vibe,
Basil.
Isn't it?
Basil. It's all right, Basil saw it.
Basil. The theory is that Basil disabled the alarms using a jammer, which I actually didn't know existed in reality. I thought that was just like a TV and computer game thing.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I didn't realise that was a thing.
At this point, the gang are just outside the big vault door. Their prize lies on the other side, except the gang never intended to open this door. Do you know what they did instead?
Blowed the bloody walls off it.
Close.
Oh.
They decided to focus instead on getting through the reinforced concrete walls using a heavy-duty Hilti DD350 drill that costs well over £3,000. The plan was to drill three holes, which would create a gap big enough for several gang members to wriggle through. They did encounter problems when drilling, which meant they needed different equipment. My understanding is they got through the walls, but were unable to topple the metal cabinet that was on the other side because it had been bolted to the wall.
Oh.
So they left the scene of the crime to get the required tools before eventually returning. It was 8 a.m. at this point, and two of the men, our ringleader, Brian Reeder, and Carl Wood, had decided they did not want to continue.
Ooh. They backed out.
They backed out. And somewhat understandably so, because they must have thought leaving and returning to a big old hole in the wall might give something away.
Yeah, you'd think.
Yeah, you would think. And actually, when I read and understood more about the situation, I'm surprised more of the gang didn't throw in the towel. Staff members had already returned to the building during the day while the gang went for more tools. Somehow, the traces of the burglary were not noticed, other than a door that they had left ajar that was simply closed again by the staff. Must not have been questioned.
No way.
Yeah, way.
That's... Oh my gosh. If you were one of those staff members, you would have kicked yourself. Like...
Oh, you'd think so. Yeah, they've just drilled like three big holes in the wall. And like I said, there was a roller shutter door that had just been obliterated, so...
The lift is, yeah, stuck on the second floor. Like, there were so many things. Oh, they might have gotten a bit of trouble, I think, for that.
Well, I'm assuming that they must have re-enabled the lift, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
The men who returned to the vault cracked on and managed to successfully get past the cabinets. They took 14 million in jewels, gold, cash, among other things, from the safe deposits before fleeing. Initially, it seemed that they had got away with the perfect heist. The media initially loved this. Even before the criminals were known, the media had a field day with speculation about a gang of Pink Panthers or a gang drawing inspiration from the film Ocean's 11.
Mm.
rumours and theories on how the gang pulled off the crime were widespread. This is probably because no one was hurt or injured, and the burglary was a commercial property. It makes you wonder, though, how did a group of men who should be enjoying their retirement decide to take part in such a huge crime?
Yeah.
Reader, the leader, was not a well man. He had prostate cancer and neutropenia. This was a blood condition making him particularly susceptible to infections.
Oh.
By the time of the crime, he'd lost his beloved wife, Lynn.
Sad.
Hmm. Perhaps he felt there was very little or nothing to lose. However, if this was the case, it almost backfired. This is because Paul Reader, Brian's son, was arrested alongside him. Paul was innocent, but got wrapped up in the case, as his father would often use his phone to communicate with his co-conspirators.
Oh, surely Reader would have known that that might, you know, if they're going to get caught, there's going to be a link there.
You'd think so. But I think there's a lot about how they got caught that suggests they are very, very clueless on modern technology.
Oh.
Paul Reader was also in ill health, and the stress of the arrest saw his health deteriorate further. If Brian Reader committed the crime because he had nothing else to lose, he clearly didn't consider the impact it may have had on the loved ones still around him.
Oh no. Okay, maybe I'm not on their side now.
Well, yeah. Another one of the offenders, Terry Perkins, was also a bit of a brazen character. Like the Readers, he was also in poor health, and the rumour is he had to keep topping up his insulin during the crime, as he was a diabetic.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I've read somewhere as well that he like fainted right in the middle of it.
Oh no!
It just sounds like a comedy about a crime or something.
Yeah.
Terry Perkins was no stranger to the way of the robbery. He'd been found guilty for his role in a raid on the Security Express depot in Shoreditch in 1983. £6 million was stolen back then, which was an awful lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
And interestingly, the story of that case is in a book called Gotcha, which is authored by two of Perkins' co-conspirators and the detective on that case.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Interesting. How did they come about? Oh, let's just write a book about this, shall we? Let's join teams.
Yeah. It just makes these heists feel more lighthearted than they are. It's kind of rogue.
Yeah. God.
During a hearing for the Hatton Garden heist trials, the video link frequently failed. Perkins suggested, quote, "Could you ask the judge and yourselves to come down to Belmarsh and we can have tea together?" Which probably epitomises his cheeky nature.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it got a good response from the people in the courtroom too. Alongside Perkins and Reader was Danny Jones, 60, an experienced robber. Jones felt obliged to make amends for his part in the crime. He wrote to Martin Brunt, the crime correspondent at Sky News, and told him, quote, "Whatever I get on Judgment Day, I will stand tall, but I want to make amends to all my loved ones and show I'm trying to change. I know it seems a bit late in my life, but I'm trying."
I was about to say, it's probably a little bit late for that.
Just a little bit, after a lifetime worth of crimes. But try he did. The police went with him to the place where he had hidden his loot, in an in-law's plot. Alas for Jones, they found more of his ill-gotten gains in another plot that he had perhaps forgotten to mention.
Okay. Oh dear.
Yeah, so I think he'd actually like forgotten from like another crime that he'd hidden extra stuff there.
Oh my goodness.
The fourth of the main conspirators, Kenny Collins from Islington, was also no stranger to crime. One of his former fellow inmates at a prison described him as, quote, "the man with the hardest head and the biggest heart in London." So what exactly was it that led to the gang's demise and eventual capture? Well, the gang of Cockney old men may have run their mouths a little too much. Plans for the crime had bounced around for about a year and a half, and too many people had been asked if they were interested in taking part.
Oh, no.
I reckon these guys are just in pubs going like, oh, yeah, do you want to...
Literally, I was going to say, I can imagine them over a pint in a pub talking about it. Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we'll get away with it. We'll get away with it, no problem. And I reckon loads of people that were drunk were like, yeah, yeah, go on, all right. And then just pull it out as soon as they sobered up.
Yeah, when they realised that they were serious about this.
Yeah, I reckon so.
Amazing.
The gang also had quickly sold some of the items for a very small amount of money when compared to their true value. I'm guessing they just wanted to get rid of some quite quickly, but this gave the police more trails to pick up.
Yeah, of course.
It's also fair to say that real heists and robberies like this one do not take place so frequently anymore. Most corporate thefts, like much of modern life, has moved online. This means we can probably assume the who may have committed this old school style heist suspect list was quite short for the police.
Yeah.
The police also planted bugs to try and get more evidence on the Gang de la Papisse. It's safe to say the old timers were quite reckless with their chatting. 14 extracts were eventually played in court. The men had been caught discussing things in the pub, and some of the extracts can be a bit amusing.
Oh no.
The biggest robbery in the fucking world we was on. They chuckled too in one extract as they discuss how to get rid of their takings. In some clips, Brian Reader and Carl Wood are teased for backing out of the crime. Some derogatory terms are thrown around, and the pair find themselves labelled as, trigger warning I suppose, soppy cunts or fucking idiots.
Oh my god.
One quote from the tapes by Danny Jones alludes to why the gang decided to give the robbery a go. He says this quote, "If we get nicked, at least we can hold our heads up that we had one last go. It's a young man's game."
Oh my gosh.
After Jones was arrested, the police found some incriminating searches on his computer. Mostly about drilling, how to drill holes, drill tech.
Oh no.
He had even got a book called Forensics for Dummies. Possibly he was hoping for a few clues on how to get away with the crime.
Brilliant.
I believe I've mentioned most of the men, but let's wrap this one up in a summary. The men arrested were Brian Reader, and he was sentenced to 6-ish years in prison and got released after just 3. Daniel Jones, Kenny Collins, and Terry Perkins all pled guilty and were sentenced to 7 years in prison. Carl Wood and William Lincoln, who I don't think I have mentioned, by the way, so he must not have been that exciting, pled not guilty, but both were found guilty of conspiracy to commit burglary and one count of conspiracy to conceal, convert, or transfer criminal property. Lincoln was given a 7-year sentence, and Wood was sentenced to 6 years. Hugh Doyle was found guilty of concealing, converting, or transferring criminal property. He was jailed for 21 months, that was suspended for 2 years.
Yeah.
A final man, John Harbinson, was found not guilty. But there was one other man, Basil.
Basil! How could I forget Basil?
How can you forget? You just cannot forget Basil. He was not found with the initial group, and it seemed like he may have gotten away with it. Who could the mysterious Basil be? The man they nicknamed the Ghost. However, the police did eventually find Basil. It all started when police reviewed all their surveillance material. They were looking for a man that may look like Basil. This is because Basil was actually there during the crime, so they had some CCTV, obviously with his face covered mostly, but they had some rough idea of what this guy might look like.
Right.
In the days after Kenny Collins was identified, police surveilled him as he met with many, many people. Some were involved in the robbery and some were not. They tried to rule out every person that Collins had met. However, one man could not be eliminated. On the 17th of April, 2015, he met a man in Shoreditch Park. On the 24th of April, he met the same man again. The police marked the man as a person of interest, but they were still not able to say for sure if it was Basil. Eventually, the police got an address and a name. Michael John Seed. This was back in 2015, though, and Seed wasn't caught until 2018 and wasn't convicted until 2019. Michael Seed was an alarm specialist. He paid no taxes, claimed no benefits, used no mobile phone, and rarely used a bank account. You could say Seed lived life off the grid.
He was like a grey man, the ones that can't be detected, under the radar.
Absolutely. Police watched Seed for 2 years. They could match Seed's build to Basil, as he was seen on CCTV during the crime. However, despite the similar build, police could not get a search warrant. That was until a distinct way of walking was noticed on Michael Seed that could easily be matched to the Basil scene in the Hatton Court CCTV examples. And this walk was, it was quite unique to be fair, I've seen the videos. The guy like flings his right leg a lot further forward than his left. So he'll just be like, he'll take like left little step, long right step, left little step, long right step. And he just, you know, kind of repeats that. Don't know why. Don't know if he thinks it's like a cool guy walk, but for whatever reason, yeah, he chooses maybe to walk that way. This finally allowed police to get a search warrant. If police had not found anything in the flat, there was a good chance that Basil, Michael Seed, would have gotten away with the crime. It said Michael Seed was very surprised to see the police arrive. What they found in his flat were gold smelters, electrical devices, and a lot of jewellery. There were two gold bars on a workbench in Seed's flat, and both of those bars had been taken from Hatton Court. In fact, over £150,000 worth of stolen goods were found in Seed's flat.
Whoa.
Michael Seed was eventually found guilty and sentenced to 10 years in jail.
10? Why was his so much more than the rest, do you know? Probably his involvement.
I don't actually know why his... I think they probably found some indicators that he was involved in other robberies when they raided his flat too.
Probably. Yeah, and he was a security consultant?
Security and alarm expert.
Yeah, there you are. I reckon he had probably, if it wasn't for him, they may not have gotten away. Like, he would have had a key role in this for them to have gotten as far as they did, I reckon.
Yeah, I think you're right on that front. But yeah, that is the case of the Hatton Garden heist. Shorter than I expected, actually. I thought the episode was going to be longer, but that's maybe I rattled through quite fast.
I have thoroughly enjoyed that. It was so, like, such a, like, fun crime to talk about. Just because it's just, it's just not what you expect from some old geezers. But then it sort of
absolutely
is,
not.
The way that they're, like, talking in pubs and, I suppose, yeah. Amazing. I think they have turned it into a movie, but...
I think there's definitely an ITV drama made on it.
But it does. It just sounds like a movie. Like, oh, incredible. Very well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you want to go through the socials in case anyone wants to share their take on maybe some other heists that they found interesting over the years?
Absolutely. So you can visit our website at www.goringguiltypodcast.com. On there, you can do your own case suggestions and we will be sure to do them. You can also send us your own personal true crime or paranormal stories and we will do a personal episode, which are always fun to do. You can also follow us on our Instagram at Goring Guilty Podcast, where we will be sharing photos from this case and others that we've spoken about. And you can interact with us, which is always good. You can follow us on Twitter at Goring Guilty. And remember, if you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review, give some stars, let us know what you think. And remember, we won't judge if...
gore is your guilty pleasure.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.